This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us is Gary Hill from the Mariner Broadcast. And, of course, it's been, I tell you what, I mean, as this had to be for the Mariners one of the toughest, I guess, week or 10-day stretches in a while. Because, I mean, you know, with the way that the road was with the Minnesota game and the rain delays, the situation with Robinson Cano, how straining has it been for this team in the last week and a half?
Yeah, no question. It was a rough week, no doubt about it. I mean, that trip was really difficult with all the travel involved, and the weather was terrible just about everywhere we went, the doubleheaders, the one day in Minnesota. It was a grueling trip, and then to get back at 3 a.m. or whatever and then have to play that next day, and the news coming down that day about Cano, it was hard. It was really hard, and I think it hit the clubhouse pretty hard as well. I think the win last night was really helpful and kind of restoring everything, but a couple of tough days after the fact. And, you know, now it is what it is. So they'll try and regroup and try and put together a nice long streak here. There's a good opportunity, you know, after spending so much time on the road to start the season. The schedule's been really rough. I mean, for the rest of the month outside of three games against Oakland, the Mariners have a chance to stay at home for a long stretch. And some teams coming in that they have a chance to take advantage of. So a real opportunity, I think, for the rest of the month for the Mariners.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I noticed, and you can just see the guys are starting. I think they have to be wearing down. I mean, I anticipated that as soon as it was at the three-hour wait on Friday night last week. And then that was brutal. And then they had to do the doubleheader. And, you know, you can see fatigue in the bullpen, fatigue with some of the position players. It has to be there.
Yeah, and I think you saw it a couple times too. And, you know, it just shows up once in a while with a little mistake here, a little mistake there. And unfortunately, at this level, really no matter who you're playing, you know, you leave the door open just a little bit, you know, give a team an extra out. Something along those lines is usually you pay for it. And that's what's tough, so tough about this game. And that's why it's always referred to as the grind, because every team goes through these stretches at some point where you're taking the field, you're not 100% mentally or physically, and you have to find a way to get it done. So Mariners, good to be through this stretch and now rested and ready to go after a big win last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first six innings were really tough. And I think you can see that the team's clearly, I think, maybe not just from a mental standpoint, is still trying to make the adjustment without Robinson Cano. Because, again, he was so valuable as the number three hitter. And what in the games he's not been there, he's been about 250 as far as the average for the number three hitter and a lot of guys in scoring position. But, again, they're trying to make that adjustment. But, what are you seeing as far as the impact without Cano?
You know, it's been hard to tell because it was kind of a double whammy, because the first game Cano was out, Cruz got hit, and he was out as well. So not only did they play the last few until last night without Cano, it was without Cruz as well. So it's really hard at this point to determine the impact. It was good to see Cruz back in the lineup last night. I mean, he is a massive difference maker for this team, as always, but even more so now. They really need him in the middle of the order. And I thought Fulmer was great last night. He was really dealing. The Mariners actually got him for six earned runs in Detroit, which is the most he's ever given up in a start. But he was on his game last night. They came through in the seventh inning. I still think, you know, there's no question about it. Cano is going to be a huge loss. I mean, he's such a great hitter. He's going to be a big loss. At the same time, you know, the Mariners' offense is as deep as it has been in a long time. This lineup still has a lot of length to it, and with Cruz back in the middle, I mean, we saw it last night, an explosive group, a team that can put some crooked numbers on the board pretty quickly, a team that still has pop up and down the order. So in terms of surviving it, I think they certainly can. I think they're more than capable, and I think their lineup is still really good, even without Robbie Cano in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. It looks like Mike Zunino is starting to really struggle. His average down to about 193.
Yeah, you know, we just haven't seen him get in that groove yet. You know, the injury early was so unfortunate right before the regular season. in spring, and I know it's spring, but he was in such a great place. He was in such a big groove. Then he gets the oblique, and, you know, he just hasn't found that quite yet. We've seen it in tiny spurts, but we haven't seen him in that great place. We saw him last year as well. I still think he'll get there. I still have a lot of confidence in Mike Zunino. I just think it's a matter of time.
Yeah, and of course, maybe the game last night with the big single by Ben Gamble, that can kind of get him because he's down to about 217.
Yeah, you know, he has started to work into a better groove. And the Skipper has talked about this a couple times, too. He's been Babbitt along the way a little bit. He's had maybe more bad luck than anyone else on the roster. He's hit the ball hard, especially the last couple weeks in places, and just hasn't had a lot to show for it. But he's come to life a little bit, and they're going to need it. I mean, you mentioned Zunino, you mentioned Gamble. I mean, this is really going to be a team effort up and down the lineup, especially without Cano in there. They're all going to have to contribute. And, you know, slow starts for a couple of guys, but I think optimistically, you look at Gamble recently, and hopefully Zunino can get there as well. It's a good lineup up and down. I mean, especially with Haniger and Seager, he's starting to get into a groove a little bit, and Cruz back after being hit, and thank goodness that wasn't anything more serious. We were a little worried at the time, but he's back in the lineup. And, of course, at the top, Gordon and Segura have been really steady and outstanding all season long.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was good for Juan Nicasio to come out and have a good game last night, going three in a row after the struggles he's had of late.
You know, it really was. It was great to see him. I mean, we've talked about his stuff has been really good, especially as of late. It's just been command, and he's been leaving balls right over the middle of the plate. It was great to see him, especially, you know, he was warming up. He was going to come into the game regardless. A little thin in the bullpen last night, and then they take a one-run lead, and he's able to hold it. I thought that was huge because, really, when you look at this bullpen, it fits together so well when he is the eighth-inning guy. I think he is the key to the whole thing in the bullpen to bridge it to Diaz, because then Scott Servais has a lot of options in the sixth and seventh inning and can play a little bit more matchup with guys like Nick Vinson. I'm really encouraged by what we've seen from Pazos. I mean, he has been lights out for a month. Altavilla last night I thought was big as well. If he can get back to what we saw at the beginning of the season, that'd be another live arm in the bullpen. And I'm intrigued by Ryan Cook, you know, a former All-Star who has been injury plagued the last few years. He just got back to the big leagues for the first time since 2015. I thought he looked great. His stuff was electric, 95, 96. I mean, they'll have to be careful with him, especially back-to-backs here, especially coming up for the first time. But he's a guy that looks – he could be a real weapon for this bullpen as well. But I think it all hinges on Nicasio trying to lock down the eighth inning, and it really sets the table for everything else Scott Servais wants to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's now – I think the biggest thing other than trying to figure out, not figure out, I mean, get better production out of number three in the batting order without Cano, but also that eighth inning now, there's so much uncertainty because with Nicasio struggling, you don't know which way it's going to go.
Exactly. And, I mean, it just sets up so much easier when you know, okay, Diaz ninth, Nicasio eighth, and then you can mix and match. It just makes life so much easier for Scott Servais and everyone else. And I think Nicasio's going to get there. He's got a long track record, and I mean, this happens with bullpen guys from time to time, really, no matter how good they are. It's the nature of pitching out of the bullpen. We saw it with Diaz last year. I mean, we've seen it with just about everyone goes through this at time to time in their career. So I think he's going to get there, and when he does, I mean, it's a game changer for the Mariners.
Oh, no question. Starting pitching, that's the one positive. I think, starting pitching has been reasonably good.
I think so. I mean, they've been healthy. They've taken the ball. I mean, every 5 days, James Paxton right now is elite. I mean, you look at his last four starts, it's pretty ridiculous. So 1.61 ERA, 1.62 batting average against, and you kind of peel back the layers a little bit. His cutter's been awesome all season. His fastball's been great all season, but his curveball, his last four games, has been a great weapon as well. And when you have all three of those going, I mean, there's very little chance for opponents at this point. He's been elite. Felix has given them chances to win, and that's what you're asking for. Last night, a great example, a rocky start with three runs in the first inning, but – if he doesn't settle in and give the Mariners six, they don't win that game, and that's exactly what he did. I've liked what we've seen from Marco Gonzalez so far this year. He's given them chances. Their spot starts have been excellent as well. I mean, Bergman and LeBlanc, I don't think you could ask any more from what you've seen from those two guys in their brief cameos in the rotation. I think we're still looking for more consistency from Leak. He's a guy that can be more consistent, obviously, as the track record to do it. And I think that will help the cause once he is as well. But I think for the most part, especially with this offense, you're not asking them to go out and throw no-hitters and shut out opponents. I think six, seven solid innings on a nightly basis, like we saw from Felix last night, you're going to win a lot of those games.
Okay. Well, of course, great to see. And, of course, Gary, as always, want to thank you very much. We'll be listening tonight. Mariners take on Detroit in Game 3 of the four-game series.
Thanks, John. Should be fun. James Paxton on the hill. His first start back since the no-hitter. So that should be a good time.
Should be good. Hey, Gary, thank you so much.
Anytime, John.
Okay.
Great talking to you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed in Shoreline. Hey, Ed.
Hey, JC. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing well. I heard your piece yesterday talking about George Fant and his role on the offensive line, moving to right tackle and so forth. So two questions for you. One, why is the national media ignoring Fant? He's a pretty good player.
And then I think it's simple. Nobody knows who he is.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that's a real simple one because again, it's like you're talking about somebody that is a success story because he never played the position before and he ended up playing eight games and playing at a pretty good level. And so he's not going to be on anybody's radar unless you watched here.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying, but like you just said, when he played reasonably well, mm-hmm. and so. He should be on people's radar, but I guess maybe this is a good thing from the Seahawks in general. They tend to have players that have chips on their shoulders, are below the radar. A related question, like who's going to play wide receiver, they must be thinking that Amara Darbo is going to emerge as someone to replace Paul Richardson. Because I really think that it was a major mistake letting Paul Richardson go otherwise. Because otherwise, I think this is a 6-10 team.
What, you mean just because of the wide receiver position? Or
a combination of the wide receivers and the running game being such a question mark.
Mm-hmm. But I think they're trying to clean that up. Now, again, I still think that when you start to think that when you're looking at the number five receiver in the team and you got prospects like David Moore, Marcus Johnson, Tanner McElvoy and all that, you can kind of see they can still use a wide receiver if they can pick one up. And, they looked at Brandon Marshall, didn't sign him. So I think they still could be in there. But I think they are counting on Darbo. And understand, it's like, there's only been like in the Pete Carroll era, particularly with Daryl Bevel, only two receivers. It really did well in the first year. And that was Doug Baldwin, and that was Tyler Lockett. I mean, they both did well in the first year because it takes time to adjust into that West Coast offense. Now you got a different type of offense. I think it'll be a little bit simpler, maybe be a little bit faster. I think Darbo can come on this year and do some things. But, they can't lull themselves into some complacency because still I agree with you that, it's a quarterback's going to make the thing work if they can get the running game, get off to better starts, and just play something close to what they did in 2011, 12, and 13.
So with regard to Darbo, what I saw of him last year, I thought he really had some major potential. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing from him when you're on the sidelines and in practice and such?
We didn't see a lot of him because, again, he wasn't the in the top three groups, and so you only saw a limited basis. I think you can see he's a big target. I think you can see he's powerful. I mean, I think you can see that he can make a big play or two. You just need to see more of him, and that, of course, is going to be the positive thing that I think that you'll start to see. So overall, I think he offers some good things, but I think that, you know, I think he can step into the number three role. But again, if you're going to be John Snyder, I still think you got to continue to look around and see what else is available, just in case you can add something that would be good.
So, final question: have you seen Trey Flowers play in the rookie camp? And
yes.
Did he really shine?
Let's put it this way. I don't know if you want to say the word shine, but I think what you could see is that he looks the part, because when you see him, you know, bend over, get his footwork in, have his hands toward the wide receiver, I mean, it just reminds you so much of Richard Sherman. I mean, that's the look that you see. Now, again, he still has to, you know, get the footwork down and do all the right things there, but I think it's very encouraging what you can see with him.
Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. How is Mrs. Clayton and you
doing well, doing better.
Wonderful Saturday?
What's that again?
How are you and Mrs. Clayton doing this wonderful Saturday?
Doing well.
Oh, any plans for the weekend?
Nothing big, no.
No big. Well, Mr. Clayton, a couple of things. Once again, in the spring, there's always that chatter of Notre Dame needs to join a conference.
They do.
I know you're a big proponent of that. But once again, in a great article, it was simply pointed out they never will because of two fundamental reasons, Mr. Clayton.
They don't want to win?
What do you think those might be?
Being stubborn.
Oh, no, Mr. Clayton. It's simpler than that. It's money and the ability to, in this modern day of college football, have the schedule that the committee will deem worthy enough to play for the national championship.
But see, the problem is you got to win the games, and that's where the problem is. You got to win those big games.
That's why these young men go to Notre Dame, to play the best, because, as you know, every young man thinks he is the best.
Mm-hmm.
So why not give these young men a chance to prove it? And Notre Dame seems to do pretty good with recruiting every year.
They do okay, yeah.
So I agree, though, you know, and it always is very tough. This year it's Michigan right out of the bat, first game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they play Stanford, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, Florida State, USC. Certainly a national championship team schedule, no doubt about it.
It is a tough schedule, there's no doubt. But the question is...
It's a great schedule, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm. How do you think they'll do in that schedule?
They'll do just super. I don't know. 10-2, 11-1. Hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to say. It's a new team. Mr. Clayton?
Yes.
While I still have a minute with you. You know, there was this conversation about the Seahawks quarterback, and the question was, will they re-sign him?
Yeah.
And the reason was, of course, money. Now, he has 2 years left. Is that right on his contract?
That's correct. This year and next.
Okay. So this year, they'll probably do the old anoint him as the most valuable player and get away with maybe just having to pay him $30 million, a $10 million raise, right? He's $22 million, something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that what his annual contract is?
$21.9 million.
Okay. So all they have to do by declaring him as the top player, pay him what, 20% of what the average is?
He's making $21.9 million, and of course his cap number in the last year of the deal is going to be like, he's going to make about $25 million for a cap number.
Okay. Okay. So, and the way they get around not paying him or renegotiating his contract is just make him the top player. I'm blanking out on the phrase for what they
30
do
million is what the going
player.
Cost is
that?
Now for Matt Ryan.
Hello?
Yes, Matt Ryan's making $30 million. He's at the top.
Okay, so the most they'd have to pay him is $30 million, right? Roughly?
I would think so. Right. Well, not right now. I think that Aaron Rodgers will probably get a deal done, and that'll put it up to $31.75 or above.
That's cheap for considering not being have to renegotiate. So in 2 years, when his contract is up, right, officially?
Right.
Don't they do it one more time as far as making him the player, and then they end up only having to pay him $40 million?
No,
like that,
I think
45?
That they'll try to get it done probably at about 31.
So the point is the Seahawks can avoid having to renew the contract for a huge amount of money. Do you think that's where they'll go?
No, I think they'll try to sign him. I mean, he's the most important guy on the franchise right now.
I understand that, but do you really think that Pete Carroll's going to be around in 3 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The argument was compelling to why they necessarily wouldn't re-sign him and basically start rebuild again.
Well, let's put it this way. That would just be a disaster because now, I mean, you're giving up one of the best quarterbacks in football, and that just simply doesn't happen.
The argument was that in the next couple of years, he's going to have to prove he is one of the best, isn't he?
Oh, he's proven it does every year. I mean, he was an MVP candidate until like the final 3-4 weeks of the season.
There's a lot here on the anyway. Okay.
Okay. So, all right, got to run.
Great weekend. Save your soul. Come to Jesus.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David. Hey, David, how are you?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good, just waiting for the sun to come out.
Yeah.
I had a question for you about the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Would you agree that this is probably one of the better drafts that we've had in a long time?
I thought it was a good draft. I wouldn't say it's one of the better ones, but I think it's better than anybody has anticipated. I thought overall, they touched all the things that they really wanted. I mean, they were able to get a pass rusher. They were able to get a running back. They were able to get an offensive lineman. They surprised everybody with a punter. They got a cornerback.
Right. And I really like that punter, too. I'm already a big fan of just everything that he's going to bring to our team. But my other question is, how many more players are we from contending for another Super Bowl? And can you get into detail who those players might be or what positions might those be that we need to take us to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, what you're looking at now, they've got, and even though they've got other guys that have been to the Pro Bowl, I mean, they've got five key guys. I think that, Frank Clark can take a step up. I mean, they probably need two or three more players. Because again, when you lose the five Pro Bowlers that they lost on defense and then one on offense and Jimmy Graham, that's a lot to replace. And, the idea is to be a Super Bowl team. I mean, you need probably, they call them blue players, 10 to 11 blue players. And so they probably, if Shaquille Griffin develops into one of the blue players and core group guys, but they probably need two or three guys to develop into core group guys. Frank Clark can be one of those, if he has, a 10 plus sack year. They need one at the cornerback position. Certainly, at some point they need to take a look at Delano Hill to see where he stands as far as that goes. But they're probably two or three players away. And they need a Pro Bowl caliber season from at least two of the offensive linemen.
Yeah, and we definitely need a wide receiver as well. And what do you think of trading Earl Thomas for a receiver this year, because I just don't see the benefit of keeping him, just letting him play out his contract and then just letting him walk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you see the Seahawks signing him to an extension or still trading him like sometime this year?
I think it depends on how his attitude is. If his attitude is very positive, then I think then all should be fine in that regard, because, you know, they got to first see if and when he comes in and then make a judgment where he is as far as his interest on the team, you know, because I think, you know how valuable he can be. That's because, again, now if you take away Earl Thomas, that's another one that somebody either has to step up. Replace. But yeah, it's like
Dedrick Thompson. I'm curious to see what he can do, and Delano Hill as well. But do you really think that those guys can live up to Earl Thomas and what he's been able to bring every Sunday?
That's the hard one, because if you would put, let's say, Richard Sherman with the way he played and Earl Thomas with the way that he plays at the Hall of Fame, near the Hall of Fame level, then you can see it's like, okay, now can he get to that level? And you say, that's going to be pretty hard. I mean, Hall of Fame level is pretty hard. That's the tough challenge. But again, you know, the system on defense is one that I think, helps, because, I mean, you go still back to last year and the final seven games, their numbers, except for the Rams game, were respectable on defense. And this is without, three of the guys that aren't going to be with the team: Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, with likely not there, and Cliff Avril.
Right. So it's basically, we just need the right pieces to fit our defense and what Pete Carroll does.
Right.
And I really love Earl Thomas. I really hope that, he's got a great attitude about this season, and hopefully we sign him and he can retire as a Seahawks. How do you feel about that, him retiring as a Seahawks?
I think it would be great, because, again, I mean, he's such a great player. But and you want to keep as many great players as you can. They've got about $67 million under the salary cap next year, so they have the ability to start to take care of some of these guys. And if they want to get him done, and I know they would like to get him done, but if they want to get him done, then there's still a chance that they can do that.
All right, well, you have a great day, John. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Kirkland. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Hey, I wish I had your brain.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I was just wondering if NFL is going towards becoming like the boxing, like going downwards. The popularity.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, I think you can see there certainly is a little bit of drainage. There's no question. But there's still the revenues continue to skyrocket. And if you're declining, you're not going to have the declining skyrocketing of the revenues. So it's still a very viable league. It still has popular interest. And again, this is now not even anticipating what it's going to mean with the gambling now being legal.
Mm.
Think about that.
So, do you think like the gambling thing is going to like make it up?
I think it's going to help.
Okay.
Because I think honestly, it's just what it does. It just gives more interest in the different things and more analytics you can look at, and just so many more things that just get you more into the game. And because what you're seeing is a whole new generation of fans that are doing it differently than maybe you or me. They're into fantasy. They're into watching on TV, watching on the iPhone, and so they may not be watching on conventional TV. They're watching the Red Zone channel and maybe not watching the regular game, but they're watching, and that's where the interest still is.
But the fun of the game, like for example, like boxing, like 20 years ago, it was like on the top. Like,
mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to watch boxing.
Right.
But now, coming down to this age, like I don't even know who is like the heavyweight champion.
Yeah, you're like me. I'm in the same boat, because I still loved every Saturday, particularly on HBO, to watch some of the big fights. And now I can't even hardly name anybody.
Exactly. And I feel like with all the rules and all these things that's coming up, it feels like NFL is going to go down that direction.
Yeah, I still don't buy it. I mean, they can't be overconfident in thinking that everything will be okay. They've got to continue to work on the game and make it as good as possible. But I still think everything's still in good shape.
So, like, as a fan to the NFL, do you think like if there is anything that we can do to save the
The only thing you can do is just watch the sport. That's the key.
Okay.
Keep watching.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for the phone call.
I'll keep watching it.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show, producing the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, another great show.
Thank you.
Any series coming up?
Not right now. I'm still kind of waiting. Had one a week ago Friday, so I thought maybe they were going to hook up at the owner's meeting, but right now they're not going to be at the owner's meeting. So I'm sure it'll be coming up here in a couple of weeks because I know Jim and them will be taking some time off.
Yeah, I tune in at 12, and about 12:05 I determine you're not on, then it's back to Howard Stern.
Oh, appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, a couple quick ones. With that linebacker Denver drafted last year, and then they kept moving him from defensive line to linebacker. They say he got back to his normal weight of 280 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to put him at outside linebacker. I think it's Walker.
Right.
Do you think he's going to be able to, because there's a lot of depth at linebacker. Is that going to be his best place?
Probably, yeah, because, and that's the thing that, because it's different defense than Wade Phillips. And obviously, I think, there's maybe a little bit more 4-3 principles in there. So, no, I think he can make it at linebacker. Obviously, it's a matter that, Vance Joseph's got to coach better. He's got to do a better job.
Yeah, definitely. More motivation and hold people accountable. And then a question on the kickoff. They said that, one of the dangerous plays and that there are 18 concussions. Did they ever break down to which people got the concussions? Were that the big uglies that are blocking or was it
I'll try to follow up on that at the owner's meeting. They've never really they haven't broken it down like that to give you an idea, which guys are the ones that did that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, John, you have a great weekend, bud. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rob in Vancouver. Hey, Rob.
Hey, John.
Oh, Ron.
I'm
sorry.
Ron in Vancouver.
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I want to have your outlook on the NFC East this coming season, and in particular, Washington and Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because that's been a big debate this week on Alex because, people tend to forget how good he was last year. And, he was able to make long throws that he never really was able to do in his career last year. He was very successful with that. I think he'll do well. I mean, I think they're on a sturdier position at wide receiver this year because, I thought like anything else, if you lose two guys out of the mix, and you don't automatically replace them. Because remember, they lose Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, and their receiving corps dropped down, and the offensive line had all kind of injuries, and so they had all kind of problems like that. I mean, I think, one, the offensive line's going to be healthier. Two, they're now a little bit more sturdy at the wide receiver position, and hopefully they'll get Jordan Reed to be healthy this year. So I think they should be okay. I still question where they are at running back. As far as, the Eagles, I worry a little bit about some of the injuries that are starting to creep up on that team. The Giants are going to try to bounce back, but how much is still a big question. And Dallas, I still think when the changes they have at wide receiver, particularly, losing Jason Witten at tight end and also, the changeover with Dez Bryant, I think they'll take they'll be not that much better.
So Washington could have a shot, you're saying?
Yes, I do. I really do.
And what about one quick one? What about Vernon Davis? What do you think his role will be this coming year?
Pretty much as it's been. I mean, he keeps himself in incredible shape. I mean, the guy is a workhorse. He's still quick downfield. I know I spent a lot of time with him at the Super Bowl. I still think, he may have a little decrease in his playing time, but I still think that he is so valuable for that team.
Yeah, good. Good. Thanks a lot, John. Have a good weekend.
Say thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Kevin in Gig Harbor. Hey, Kevin.
Hey there, John.
Hey.
I had a question about if D moving to second base, is that kind of a look for the future with perhaps Nelly not being here next year and Robbie not having as much range? We'll see how much range D has, and we'll probably be pretty... I just wonder if to Robbie perhaps in the next year, just being in the DH role. Is that
well? Ken Rosenthal made a point about that, saying that that's one of the things that he thought that they might put Cano at first base, but Ryan Healy, they still have control of his contract, so it could be if they don't bring Cruz back, they might take Robinson and make him the DH. But I think there's the thought there. I don't know how much thought it is, because again, this is one of those things that just popped out of the blue for at least a team standpoint. I mean, obviously Robinson knew about it since the offseason in trying to get this all figured out with with the problems that he has with the suspension. But no, I think that there will be a thought that he might be in second base next year.
Yeah, I just can't see in the last 3-4 years of his contract Robbie being at second, so he's going to have to probably shift around where he has even less mobility as the years come on. So,
right.
Okay, just wanted to pick your brain.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
And I thank you very much. And of course, let's go quickly to Jerry in Seattle. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, John. Huge fan.
Well, thank you.
Had a question about CJ Procise. What if he doesn't make the running back room and just moves to wide receiver?
He's not, the body really isn't the, well, of course, I mean, he played wide receiver in college, and I guess that is one of the options they can do, but he's 230 pounds and he's more of a pounding type of back who can run the routes. I guess if he's over at wide receiver, he probably is not going to get hit as much and get less chance of injury, but I think they want him at running back, and they just want to see him healthy. And that's the big thing. Can he stay healthy? He's a talent. There's no question. Hey, thank you. And thank everybody. I'll be back I'll be in Denver, flying to Atlanta at 10 o'clock on Monday. And of course, we'll be back next week on Saturday at 9. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.